Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. We're happy to have you with us on this Friday. Hurricane Maria hit Puerto Rico on September 20th. The storm killed 34 people. It wiped out power and water for millions. The island will be rebuilt, but it won't ever be the same. David Begno of CBS News spent more than 2 weeks reporting in Puerto Rico. He's back on the mainland now, and he's in the studio here with me. David, how was Puerto Rico when you left it?
In dire need. 13 days after the storm made landfall, they were still in an emergency. I just could not understand why the governor of Puerto Rico stood before the microphone every morning and said, FEMA's helping, we're getting what we need, but we need more. And I said to him, what more do you need to move this out of the emergency phase? And he listed a number of things like money, like personnel. And I think, Todd, there'll be a time to ask those questions of what was your plan prior to the storm? Because when I was there, Todd, before the storm made landfall, the governor told me it is going to be catastrophic. So how many resources were lined up? Did the military have ships and personnel off the coast? There'll be the time to autopsy that. But it was still an emergency phase. And still today as we talk, there's an emergency phase on the island. Why? Because they're still trying to get food and water to people who so desperately need it.
You're talking about the small towns in the interior, the mountainous region that we keep hearing about, the places that are cut off and aren't near San Juan.
Isolated areas that are identified as having special needs. And within the last 24 hours, the government sent in fuel trucks to position in those municipalities so that one fuel truck would service that one area, right? And they identified roughly 15 different isolated areas. But again, what took so long to get those specialized fuel trucks and park them there?
We've heard all these calls over the last couple of days for airlifts, helicopters. Forget about the trucks. Forget about the containers stacked up in the ports. Yes, some of them are moving, but members of Congress, disaster experts, former officials that we've talked to, and I know you've talked to as well, have been saying you got to airdrop to some of these towns.
The reason why, Todd, is because most of these areas may be cut off by a road that's been wiped out, by a mudslide that has just marched through a neighborhood and wiped everything away. Remember, there were three elderly sisters who died in the interior of the island. They were in a home, and they had actually evacuated to an area that they thought was safe. And a mudslide, as the director of public safety told me, the mudslide literally pushed through the home and killed them. A fourth sister was able to run away and call for help. But helicopters are some of the only ways to reach those isolated areas, and not only to deliver aid, Todd, but also to get the word out. Because the governor has told us he thinks one of the main problems they're having is they're not able to tell people where to go to get help. So let's say if a pallet of food and water goes to a municipality, people in that area may not know where to find it. And because they can't make phone calls, cell phones don't work, and the mayor may not have time to do it, the governor was suggesting that mayors get on a bullhorn and ride through town telling people. And if that doesn't work, the governor was suggesting let's use a helicopter with an intercom system to fly over areas and mass announce to people, here's where to go.
I'm sorry, aren't these the basics of disaster preparedness? I mean, hasn't somebody thought this through, that there are towns in the middle of an island like Puerto Rico that could just be cut off? It's easy for me to say in hindsight, I realize that. Some of this sounds unbelievably basic, maddeningly so.
Maddening is the right word. Let me tell you what else was maddening. To go to the port of San Juan after the governor told me that morning, hey, listen, we don't have the truck drivers that we need. And I said, well, where are the truck drivers? And he said, well, their homes may have been destroyed, or they can't drive, or they don't have enough gas in their fuel tank. They're not available. I said, so what are you going to do? He said, well, we'll take anybody. I mean, he made a mass appeal for anyone with a commercial driver's license. And he said, I'll take bus drivers. And I said, well, where are these goods they're supposed to deliver? And he said, the port. So we went there. Let me tell you something. There's nothing more maddening than looking at 3,000 shipping containers sitting there that you know have about 500,000 supplies, right, to help 500,000 people. But you know, what more could Puerto Rico have done? The governor's going to have to answer those questions. But let me tell you something. The island was so weak to begin with. The power infrastructure, look, if they have a minor storm, the power goes out, right? That's why they anticipated the power would go out across the island, and they were right. And the governor said in some areas the power may be out for up to 10 months or a year.
A year. The island is weak, but it's also a territory of the United States. You say that Puerto Rico is going to have to answer for this. Washington's going to have to answer for it as well.
Absolutely. But I think people in Washington are also going to have to start talking about Puerto Rico more than we ever did before. That's the fundamental frustration that people in Puerto Rico have. Folks on the ground told me people weren't even talking about us before this hurricane. This hurricane at least has created a conversation about what we need so desperately. They filed for bankruptcy this year. I mean, literally the government has come in and oversees everything they do. And I will tell you, the Secretary of Education told me this hurricane may be the best thing to happen to this island. And I kind of looked at her with big eyes and I said, what do you mean? And she said, we were trying to make changes to the education system here and it was going to be next to impossible. And she said, now that we have the green light. And the governor also feels the same regarding the infrastructure. It was going to cost money they didn't have to rebuild the power grid. But now they have no choice.
But David, that sounds like instead of a reckoning or a soul searching, that a lot of people are seeing great opportunity and even opportunism. I'm not sure if I'm going too far, but that's what it sounds like.
What do you mean?
Seeing the bright side to a school system being destroyed and saying, now we can remake it in our image. A lot of people have said this is the opportunity to privatize Puerto Rico's electrical grid, something we've wanted to do for ages, and now we can do it. And I wonder if that's part of this.
Perhaps. I'll tell you, there's a lot of things that people have been wanting to do that they see there's no better time than now to make it happen. That includes the governor who stood at the podium. And I remember asking him probably on the 13th day, what more do you need to move this out of the emergency phase? You keep telling me that you're getting what you need and FEMA's helping and the Trump administration couldn't be more accommodating. But you are still struggling to provide the people of this island, Americans, right? I mean, let's refer to them as what they are. They're Americans, right? This is not a foreign land. What more do you need? And he kind of stood for a minute and he put both hands on the podium and he said, I would invite you all to reflect. And then he went on for about 10 minutes. And essentially what he said was, we are in desperate need and we were in desperate need before this storm. And he said, if we don't get the financial assistance that we need, there will be a mass exodus of Puerto Ricans to the mainland.
I mean, people were talking about Puerto Rico before this storm, but they were talking about it only in terms of how much they owe, $70 billion. Who's going to get paid first? Which investors? Who in the bond markets are going to get paid? And then the president went to Puerto Rico and pretty much repeated the same message. He said, you know, you really screwed up our budget, Puerto Rico. That's the thing that got to the top of the newscast before empathy, before relief, before airlifts, and before water.
Well, and look, let me tell you something. Well, let me take a little bit of exception with that. I mean, you know, the news coverage in and around Puerto Rico was continuous before the president got there. And so I think what surprised a lot of people, at least from our reporting and what I heard from people, was that the president seemed to be out of touch with what was happening on the ground and with the words that were coming out of his mouth. That's how the Puerto Ricans felt that I spoke with. I remember talking to a group of ladies who were sitting down having lunch and having a nice time. And I walked up and they said, you know, don't let our smiles fool you. We have no running water and no power at home. And they were talking about Donald Trump. It was on the day he visited. And I said, what did you think? And one lady said, I don't know why he came here because all he's been doing is fighting with people. One man we spoke with on the street said, I think it's great that he came here because I think things are going to happen now faster because of the president's presence in Puerto Rico. So reaction was mixed. But prior to that, Todd, never heard anyone mention Donald Trump's name, not one person.
I remember you saying that on the show the day before that nobody had mentioned it.
Not one person. All they wondered was where's the military? Where's the army? I'll never forget that woman outside the San Juan airport looking right into the camera and saying, where's the army? We are Americans. Why are we having to wait?
Still, you're operating in this environment in Puerto Rico. You mentioned the president's visit. You're trying to tell this story to Americans every night on the CBS Evening News with direct counter messaging coming from the loudest microphone in the world at the White House. All White Houses spin to their benefit in disasters and other situations. That's not new. But this White House brands any story that it doesn't like as fake, as lies, as fake news. That's just sort of strategy over there. So operating in an environment like that, trying to tell these stories of how people are suffering, when the president says Everything's going great. FEMA's going great. My military's going great. It's all great.
Let me answer that question this way. 2% of my reporting has involved Donald Trump, and it only involved him on the day he arrived. When he left, that was it. Never heard another word from anybody on the ground about Donald Trump. In the era of fake news, I've never covered a story where journalism made a larger impact than this. And what I mean by that is when young people go to school and dream of being in journalism, you hear from professors and mentors that journalism can be not only something that pursues and maintains the integrity and truth and all that, but it can inspire and it can help. And that's a plus. Well, let me tell you something. When I was coming back to the airport in San Juan and a grown man walked up to me and was crying uncontrollably, he wasn't crying uncontrollably because he recognized me and he liked my work on television. He was crying uncontrollably because it was a lifeline. The journalism became a lifeline for the Puerto Ricans on the mainland who had no connection to the island, and vice versa when the island people were able to get a spotty cell phone connection to find out what was going on. Journalism has been recognized as being a public service. And it's what we journalists all dream about. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, can't we do something a little bit more than just telling you what's going on, right? And, you know, there's this big conversation about the line that journalists, you know, you don't want to go too far. You don't want to cross that line. I didn't hand out food. I didn't hand out water. I didn't rescue anybody. I'm not a first responder. I simply highlighted the work that they did. But if asking questions and not being satisfied with the answer, not thinking that the answer is enough, and going back and asking that question 2 and 3 times gets results, if that's advocacy journalism, then sign me up. Because at the airport, when those 1,000 people were sitting there, and those babies were sleeping, sweating in their strollers, stripped naked by their parents because they were so hot, and their moms and dads were fanning them, as a dialysis patient stood nearby with her daughter yelling that if her mother didn't get on a flight to the mainland, she was going to die because her dialysis center was closed, with people on the ground so patiently waiting to get food and water as they sweat. I went to the governor and I said, "What's being done?" And he said, "Oh, well, we saw your reporting and you know, we sent supplies over there." And I said, no, I just left. It's not there. Mm. And he said, "Well, we'll get on it." And he made good on his word. Journalism has been recognized. And don't take it from me. Take it from the people of Puerto Rico. Take it from them who have said journalism has been a lifeline for us.
So you got back to the mainland. Maybe you haven't left the story behind entirely. I don't know if you're going back.
I am going back very soon, actually.
When?
Well, I think when I'm finished talking to you, I'm on a plane to the Gulf Coast to cover another hurricane. And as soon as Nate rolls through, then I'm going back to San Juan. I expect to be there as early as the middle of next week.
So your overall assessment then, David Begno, of what's in store for Puerto Rico, what they're going to need to recover?
The reality is there are people on the ground who will tell you this storm will bring things to Puerto Rico that they have been begging to get and they wondered if they ever would. The reality is people will leave that island because this for them will be the final straw. I remember a woman saying, "I'm getting out of here and I ain't coming back. I ain't coming back."
David Begno, it's great to have you here, and it's been great to have your reporting. America has benefited from what you've done and what other journalists have done in Puerto Rico as well. And that story needs to continue to be told, and we're glad you're doing it. So thanks for coming in.
Thank you to journalism.
David Begno, CBS News.